Blog Talk Radio.
Jose. Dude. Sorry. From the race blind Lady Justice statue to the racially motivated shenanigans of the Department of Justice and the related shootings in Ferguson and broadcasting from a small innocuous camoed single wide trailer in the Mesilla Valley. Kelly here, and there was a shooting, and it was, in my opinion, all of this stuff has been stirred up by the talk on racism in our post-racial society, but it happened out in Ferguson. Two cops were shot. They were ambushed and seriously injured. Protests continue after police chief quits. I don't know. I have no idea what motivates Barack Obama or any of these other people, but I think the whether they wanted it or not, we're more racially divided than we've been in a long time, for decades. And he has served to stir the pot on race over and over and over again. And while I cannot claim that he directly caused this, I believe that his reckless race carding has indirectly caused a lot of the problems that we're suffering right now. And I think that what he ought to do as the leader of all Americans is get up and encourage people to put race aside and try to get along with each other. That's my opinion, and maybe you think it's insensitive or whatever. But anyway, I got a clip from this. I was very, very appalled when I heard about this. Reuters TV.
It's up the street. A cop got shot.
Amateur video showing the chaos after two police officers were shot early Thursday morning during a protest outside police headquarters in Ferguson, Missouri.
A St. Louis County officer was struck in the shoulder, and a Webster Groves police officer was struck in the face. These police officers were standing there, and they were shot.
Several dozen protesters had gathered in front of the Ferguson Police Department Wednesday night, just hours after the city's police chief, Thomas Jackson, announced his resignation. Activists had called for the chief to resign since the August killing of unarmed black teenager Michael Brown set off weeks of demonstrations. On Wednesday night, about two dozen officers in riot gear faced off against the demonstrators. Then, just after midnight, the gunshots rang out, turning a scene of quiet into pandemonium. The St. Louis County Police Chief said the shooter was, quote, embedded within the demonstrators. Protesters on the scene said the shots did not come from where they were standing. Police said the officers shot were conscious and being treated at a nearby hospital. There have been no arrests made in the shooting.
All right, so what the president thinks he's going to gain from repeatedly bringing up race. And I understand that he's black, and therefore he might have had more experience. And I'm sure that I don't know what it's like to be black, but I just think that it's a terrible thing to, in the name of healing the racial relations, and a lot of the stuff that he's talked about has covered that, to actually make the problem worse. And here is, just from late last year, a clip from Bloomberg Business, "Are Race Relations Worse Under Obama?" Just a little analysis here for you. Kelly O'Connell, by the way, it is the 12th of March, and 610 on KOBE 523-1450. Call in if you have an opinion.
There's no shortage of things to analyze in the news, and to do some of that this morning, we're going to welcome New York Times columnist Charles Blow to the broadcast. He's joined by Washington Post columnist David Ignatius, Gene Cummings, senior editor of Bloomberg Politics, and Jerry Seib, the Wall Street Journal Washington Bureau chief. And I want to start with this business of race. Gene, Bloomberg has a new poll coming out that I must say I find astonishing. When asked if race relations are better or worse under Barack Obama, the first black president, 53% of those polls said they had gotten worse. And when you break it down further, 56% of whites said relations have gotten worse, as did 45% of blacks. Are we going backwards here when it comes to race relations?
Well, I think it depends on which community you're in. And for the black community, I'm not sure that they saw a whole lot of improvement. They were hoping. They were very hopeful for improvement. I think that when we look at our prior polls, the white community's numbers moved substantially to say that things have deteriorated in recent times. But in general, there's not a huge difference between the two. Both communities now believe that things have deteriorated. And that division is evident also when we polled where the public is on the non-verdicts in Ferguson and New York. In Ferguson, a slight majority, 52%, agree with that decision. And that's driven by a majority of whites. In New York, it is both communities view it as unacceptable. That decision is unacceptable. In both cases, about 90% of the black community, they reject both of the decisions by the grand juries not to indict.
All right, so this clip goes on for quite a while, but here's the interesting thing. You've either got you have a majority of people who are saying that race relations are worse, majority of whites, and then 45% of blacks, and then the commentator didn't mention is a large minority of people believe they haven't changed. So worse or unchanged is a terrible, in my opinion, it's a terrible, terrible indictment of this particular president. And I think that, you know, people can't help, but we've all been influenced by this presidency. But I think it's a terrible thing that he was given an opportunity to back off and to, you know, he said he claimed he's going to be post-partisan, post-racial and everything. He's been ultra-partisan and super-racial, and I think it's been a disaster. And I'm just wondering what he thought he was going to achieve by doing this. But here's something from Ben Carson. He's a black doctor. He was considered to be maybe the finest neurosurgeon in the United States. He ran the John Hopkins neurosurgery. John Hopkins is considered to be the finest research medical school in the world. And he has dropped out of that, and now he's possibly running for president. He's also a black man, but he's totally opposed to this. Here he is on the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Is it going to get worse before it gets better in the United States? Because after all, we've had an African-American president for 6 years. Ferguson is a racially charged situation. You're an African-American running for president on the Republican side. And I say that with the assumption that you will run. And I know you haven't formally declared, but you're all but in. Is it going to be another 100 years before this tableau stops unfolding every time there's a white black incident?
Well, you know, I actually believe that things were better before this president was elected. And I think that things have gotten worse because of his unusual emphasis
Can you explain more? What do you mean by that? How did they get worse, and how did he contribute to it?
Well, for instance, the incident with Henry Louis Gates, Skip Gates, and, you know, him calling out the police and, you know, how they always do this kind of thing. And, you know, the Trayvon Martin case, you know, if I had a son, this is what he would look. Rather than, you know, trying to take the balanced, objective look at things. And then, you know, what's happened here. And then the way, which really irritates me to some degree, the way he and a bunch of progressives manipulate particularly minority communities to make them feel that they are victims. And of course, if you think you're a victim, you are a victim. And
was Michael Brown a victim, Dr. Carson?
Well, he became a victim based on perhaps not having a well-established ideal of how to relate to authority.
Let me also ask you, when you say things were better before this president, some have said the president plays the so-called race card. Do you think he does?
Yes, absolutely.
Is he doing so right now?
He's trying very hard not to, because I think he is aware that people are suspicious of him doing that. So, you know, we keep an eye on him and hope for the best.
You know, I just think that when you take in the situation in Florida where the gentleman who shot the young black man, and it was called white on black, and then it turned out the guy was pretty much Hispanic, and if you saw him, you'd think he was Hispanic. And then this situation here, where the kid charges the cop and ends up getting shot. And I think the doctor's point is spot on. You grow up in a house without a father, of course you cannot relate to authority instinctually. You know, if you grow up in a house with just a mother, and this is not any indictment of the long-suffering female-led households in this Mesilla Valley, but, I mean, it's just statistically proven, if you grow up without a father, your life is going to be a lot harder statistically. You're going to be more likely to be involved in crime and drugs, to be incarcerated, and to have a hard time establishing yourself. And I think that's a spot on comment. But here is the question. Has the president done everything he can, or what he could logically do to tamp down? I mean, wouldn't it be comforting for the president to say, I'll put my faith in the police department until, you know, there's a finding apparently that came out. It said that the police department was racist, but, you know, it comes out of the Justice Department study, and everybody sees Eric Holder as a racist because, for example, he doesn't prosecute the Black Panthers when they're doing a voter tampering, or when they won't let the white voters come in, when they're pounding, tire irons into their palm, basically saying, over my dead body, are you going to come into this Philadelphia voting station and vote, Mr. Whitey. So Eric Holder is seen as a racist. So this whole thing is tainted. I don't know what happened in Ferguson. I wasn't there, but I believe that the speculation and the talk about these things from the White House down has been reckless, and it has led in part, has influenced and influenced some of the disaffected youth to lash out. And we don't know who did the shooting, but, I believe that that is what's going on here. Anyway, I've got a little bit of Loretta Lynn, Coal Miner's Daughter, listening to the history of country music, artist by artist, day by day. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450, defend your president, Frankie. Defend your president, Kathy. 619, and we will be right back. 523-1450 on KOBE, and it is the 12th, and your temperature outside right now is... Oh, forget it. It's the town in Utah. I'll come back and let you know that after this break.
Well, I was born a coal miner's daughter in a cabin on a hill in Butcher Hollow. one thing that daddy made sure of. He shoveled coal to make a poor man's dollar.
It's Kelly here, and just to let you know that there was the resignation of the police commissioner, the police chief in Ferguson, and then immediately afterwards, the cops were shot. Two cops were shot. Here's a little bit about the resignation.
Lieutenant Colonel Eichhoff, we just heard from the mayor that he started just before the killing of Michael Brown. We now know from the DOJ report, we know from the grand jury that he has not been charged with anything. He has been exonerated, basically, that what his actions were, the officer, Officer Wilson, you know, has not been condemned by the DOJ or by the grand jury. But we also know that he has been at the department in a managerial position for a while, but not very long. We also heard from the mayor that he is respected by the other officers. Whether or not he will be respected by the community is another thing.
We just need you to resign.
After months of resisting calls for his resignation, Ferguson Police Chief Thomas Jackson said today he's stepping down. Jackson came under fire almost immediately after Darren Wilson, a white Ferguson police officer, shot and killed Michael Brown, an unarmed black teenager, after a scuffle between the two. The anger began on the first day when Brown's body wasn't removed for 4 hours.
The community perceived that as less than humanity.
That initial anger grew when Jackson refused to reveal the name of the police officer who shot and killed Brown. Nearly a week later, when he did name Officer Darren Wilson, Jackson's department used the same news conference to release surveillance video of Brown stealing a pack of cigars while shoving the store clerk. Hours later, Jackson held a second press conference saying Officer Wilson did not actually know Brown was the robbery suspect during their initial encounter, sparking even more outrage.
We were trying to get unity.
You have a police chief that comes out, and it sounded in the initial press conference, is he the police chief? Is he the defense attorney?
The missteps continued. A month later, Jackson recorded an apology.
I'm truly sorry for the loss of your son.
Rejected by Brown's family as too little, too late. That night, he met with protesters agreeing to march with them, but even that meeting turned ugly. Despite all this, Jackson repeatedly said that he was the right man for the job.
I intend to see this thing through, and I've been working with a lot of community members to work on some progressive changes that will bring the community together.
Then last week, the Justice Department released the results of its investigation into the Ferguson Police Department. Disproportionately high traffic stops, searches, and arrests of black people, and several racist emails uncovered, some shared by two officers, another by the court clerk. And this, the revelation, the department systematically raised city revenues through aggressive ticketing, with blacks being hit the hardest. Jackson noting that 1 month the department passed the 2 million mark for the first time in history. Shortly after its release, I caught up with Thomas Jackson, who would not respond to repeated requests for an interview. Are you planning on resigning?
I will let you know.
Are you thinking about it?
I've told you that.
You haven't told us anything.
So what he told me in the months prior to this was that he was considering resigning, but then he came out and said, no, I'm going to stay the course. I'm going to stay in position. I want to be there for this community. And now he has indeed told everyone, the city, of course, first, that he is actually going to step.
All right. So he steps down, and then immediately two police officers are shot. They're ambushed. Now, I'm sure you're going to tell me that I'm wrong to blame this on the president, and I don't directly blame it on the president. What I want to ask you, I'm reacting a little bit emotionally to this thing, but to 523-1450, am I wrong to say that he is partially responsible for helping to create or helping to keep an atmosphere where racial outrage or reaction is kind of hype? And so, you know, he's got his number one advisor is Al Sharpton, who everybody knows uses the race card. I thought when Obama came in, he was going to be post-racial. I mean, wasn't that the claim? I mean, you wouldn't have elected somebody who said, vote for me, and by the way, we're really going to get to the root of this race problem. You know, that would have been scary to most people. Here is a little bit Liberty News TV. Race card shark Barack Obama.
How ironic, how sad, how tragic that at a time for honoring the memory and legacy of a man who wanted to heal America's racial divide, we have a president who seems intent on deepening it. Welcome to Liberty News TV. I'm Norval Rose. Martin Luther King Jr. famously expressed his dream that one day, the content of a person's character would matter more than skin color, that people would be judged for who they really are, inside, rather than for what they look like, outside. Dr. King wanted to take race off the table. Now, Barack Obama, who has no doubt benefited from King's work, now Obama seems determined to play the race card, to try to trump criticism of his presidency. In a lengthy interview appearing in the New Yorker magazine, Obama blames his sagging approval ratings, at least in part, on racial animus.
Now, that's from about a year ago when Eric Holder was resigning and they're trying to replace him. One of the things that he mentioned was part of the resistance against him was racial. So that really kind of leaves the door open there. Number one, it's racial, so therefore it's not substantial. But how much? I mean, what if the resistance to Eric Holder was 5% race? You know, or is it 95% race? You know? Anyway, 523-1450, if you think that I'm mistaken, if you think my take on this shooting in Ferguson is wrong, and, you know, ultimately these people who did it have to stand for their own actions and can't blame it on Obama or Eric Holder or anybody else. But, you know, people are influenced by the leadership. So anyway, Kelly O'Connell here, 523. I don't see the phones burning up here. I'll go ahead and shift gears and let's talk about some local news when we come back. 523-1450 to call in at 631. And I've been asked to put out a number of people who want to help with the recall. Let me pull this number up here. I just got it texted to me. And 805-6180 is my text. I think I got the text machine out in the car. the number for volunteers, and I have no idea what you'd be doing, but 575-312-1542, 312-1542 for anybody who wants to help out with the recall. The recall has been, it is not certified because they don't have enough signatures. Some of them were thrown out and for various reasons. So anyway, here is a little more Loretta Lynn, and then I'll have some local news for you. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. Be right back at 6:32 on the button.
The wrong number. I'm sorry.
Who are you calling for? It's Kelly here. Good morning, 6:35. I just had somebody call in like three times, and it sounded like they were in a wind tunnel, and then the person finally said, I think I've got the wrong number. So when I was yelling into the phone, who is this? Like the scene from, what was the name of that movie, High Plains Drifter? I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's a pretty good movie with Clint Eastwood. All right, so here is some news from the state. $6.2 billion budget moving through committee, and it's been left largely intact with the proposals still in it. This has got to be done before the session adjourns on March 21st. Here's a call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Rebecca.
Rebecca, good morning to you. Thanks for calling in, and what's on your mind?
Well, I'm upset about the race relations that we have now, and I think that Obama and the Justice Department have a lot of responsibility for what happened.
Why do you say that in particular? What comes to mind?
I think that coming out and making statements about things before they've been decided, you know, jumping the gun like in Ferguson, for instance, I think that them releasing the report like they did, and I think his speech when he was in on the bridge Sunday.
Yeah.
I think that he could have used that to at least make positive statements about how the country wanted to make race relations better and how, in other words, I feel like that he has really gone after white people, and he could have used an opportunity to try and say, you know, look, white people, they, you know, not saying white people, but that the nation wanted things to change, giving credit, you know, where he should have instead of, there's still more racism out there. There's still more racist cops and, you know, things that really hurt, I think, the whole race relation.
How do you think he could have approached this without, I mean, to make things better as opposed to worse what approach do you think would have been more profitable?
I think probably instead of jumping the gun on things, that he could have said, work with the police. Let's, see where this leads, and that we are all one people in the country, and that we have to wait for, we have to wait for the investigation. And I think that what he did, he made people look guilty even before they were proven guilty.
Yeah.
And
he is a lawyer.
Think that was that.
He is a lawyer. He's a lawyer. It's not like he's totally naive about how the process works. It's not like he's just some, so often the guy, he pretends he finds that news sitting on the couch watching ESPN on a news break. But divide and conquer might be what some people would describe this as, separate the white and the black. But I would like to know Hispanic people feel to see that, they're here. Mm-hmm. They're here in America. They're established. They're citizens. Bringing a whole bunch of illegals in here and then making them instant citizens, or it seems to me it defeats the purpose of doing things the right way. And also, I don't know that a person who grows up in America and is Hispanic would necessarily identify with a Central American who just got here,
I agree. I taught school out west in Seattle area, and then I retired and I decided, I was in Georgia, I decided to, take a job school teaching. And when I was teaching, the superintendent of the schools in Savannah made a statement on the radio and things that children were getting suspended, and it was labeled racist.
Right.
And then the mayor, and of course they were black, the mayor said, what the real problem is that whites don't know how to discipline black children the right way. They were having a big conversation about that. And really, when it gets right down to it, their perception of more suspensions was racist.
Yeah. So you've got this.
And
huge...
It wasn't.
Well, you've
it
got
was,
this, Rebecca.
That they were committing the problems in the schools.
Right. Okay. So, Rebecca, was there anything else? I got to take a break.
No. That's it.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah. Have a good day. All right, folks. Let's kind of running out of time here. I was going to point out that a lot of this problem is due to fatherlessness, but. Anyway, here is a little more Loretta Lynn, and then we'll get into some weather for you and be right back. 642 on the button, 523-1450 to call in. Hey, listen, if you think I'm wrong, by all means, I encourage you to call in, but please be able to put it into logic, Anyway, Kelly O'Connell will be right back. Oh, and well, here's your weather right here. It's Kelly here. Good morning to you. 6:45, and I've got a shocking announcement to make here. Some might even call it bizarre. Albuquerque police were told by a shooting suspect that he did it because, quote, a dog told him to. And the guy shot a woman. It's his ex-girlfriend. And it was going to be a suicide, and his neighbor's dog told him to do it. And this according to court documents, Matthew Gonzalez, 48, he saw that his ex had updated her status in social media and showing she was single, and he got angry. How many freaking brawls and shootings and other type of things has Facebook caused, Gonzalez obviously overcome with grief and turning in a bizarre direction, said told police that his neighbor has a dog that communicates with him, and the dog told him, quote, "You need to take care of this." Ruff. Gonzalez told police he planned to kill himself in front of his ex, and after making her get in the car, at one point she tried to flee. He reached for her. With his hand still on the gun, he discharged it, and he's getting held on $150,000 bond. I mean, hey, in my opinion, you should arrest the dog also as a you know, it's a conspiracy. But I wonder what breed of dog it is that would give that kind of advice. All right, gambling compact with New Mexico tribes approved. Some of them were coming up for renewal, and the Santa Fe up in the chamber up there in the roundhouse, they voted 35-7 in favor of the proposed gambling compact and in the New Mexico Senate. Anyway, here's what's interesting. They made last year almost $750 million from gambling in New Mexico. That's a lot of money, folks. And how much money did we get back? About $66 million. You think that's a fair split? It's called revenue sharing, but I would have thought maybe we'd get a little bit more. But, you know, they're a sovereign nation. Okay, New Mexico lawmakers have okayed a bill to allow hemp farming for research through the committee. It's going to be voted on the Agriculture, Water, and Wildlife Committee Wednesday. Unanimously approved Senator Cisco McSorley's proposal. And it's okay for federal law, so they're going to do it and hopefully reap some benefits from that. Here's a bill on truancy driver's license suspension bill. This is from KOB.
You don't show up for school, you lose your driver's license. That's the essence of a bill state lawmakers passed this afternoon in the House of Representatives. And Stuart Dyson has that story from Santa Fe.
Suspension of the license would kick in when the kid has 10 or more unexcused absences in a year. Educators call that chronic truancy, and they say that all too often it leads straight to dropping out. The idea is to get more kids to stay in school and graduate, and the awful prospect of losing that driver's license might help accomplish that. But in the House debate, Democrats charging that the bill is misguided and too harsh.
With the student and family knowing that they can lose their license, I think it's going to take away any progressive kind of thinking to engage students and really support them in focusing on coming to school.
The bill's Republican sponsor pointing out there are exceptions.
Would be exceptions if that truant individual was the primary income source or a main income source to the family.
The truant kid wouldn't be able to get another license until he's 18. There would be a process to appeal the suspension. The bill now goes over to the state Senate. Last year, 1 in 5 of New Mexico's high school students was classified as habitually truant.
Holy cow. I wonder if there's so much teen pregnancy out there. 20% of kids are habitually truant in this state? Is that what I just heard? That's stunning. Anyway, Kelly, I've got about 650 right now, 523-1450. And we've got a little, well, you know what? I've got a little more Loretta Lynn for you, Coal Miner's Daughter, Kelly O'Connell, and 523-1450. We'll be right back on KOBE.
I had read the Bible by the coal oil light, and everything would start all over and break up more.
Kelly, 652, and just a question. Do you think Hillary's shenanigans with her emails is going to harm her? Do you guys think that the Democrats are going to pull the plug on Hillary, or is she going to continue to soldier on, as they say? I predict she's not going to make it. All right, here's a New Mexico bill, which is going through the legislature. House Bill 445 would roll back the requirement for 20% of retail sales for public utilities to come from renewable energy sources by 2020, and they want to leave it at 15% instead of 20%. We have a call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Patty Riley.
Citizen journalist. What's up?
I've been on Facebook for the last week. I finally got on there and learned how to use it. Okay. I know a lot of people now. I'm sparking interest. I didn't realize this state had gone so socialist, communist.
How so?
So everybody seems to think it's okay to have a socialist government out there. I'm not joking you. I'm frightened by this. Does anybody realize what the world is trying to free themselves from these ideologies, these systems that have kept them enslaved? And we are now going into it like fools, blinded by the light. Does anybody remember Russia? Hitler. Were those really good times for those people? I mean, really? I am frightened by the attitudes that I've gotten out here, the responses.
Do people think you're overdoing it, you're going over the top, that you're exaggerating?
No, I don't think they do. I think that they have accepted a fact that I didn't realize this was going on, really didn't until maybe a couple years ago, but that it's okay to be a communist, a socialist. It's not. It is not. Look at Mexico. Are they thriving? We could go on. Did they thrive during Germany, during World War II?
It is mysterious why countries would accept a failed standard for their economy.
Kelly.
Patty, what do you think when you hear that Olga Pedroza had a picture of the tyrant named Fidel Castro on her desk as if he were a member of her family in a frame? What does that make you think?
That he's probably a family member because she looks just like him.
Oh, my God.
I'm dead serious. It's an infiltration. People better wake up. It is not a good system. I mean, our system wasn't perfect by any means, but it was the best one so far, and it's kept us pretty
absolutely
much free.
Absolutely. Although we have an oligarchy now. This country is run by a few families, the Clintons and the Bushes, and it's very scary.
Yeah. And the queen, she's got the tie on us, too. I mean, we are run by the oligarchs,
yeah.
And that's a scary thought. And if anybody has ever seen any documentaries about oligarchies, they ought to go watch them.
They should.
They're frightening.
Patty,
they're ugly.
Patty, I'm running out of time. Was there anything else?
No, that's all. I just wanted to bring that
up. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Folks, beware the creeping socialism. All right, here's a clip. What the? Some lady got punched in the face. A 70-year-old woman. There was a melee after a mixed martial arts performance on TV.
70-year-old Linda Lyons says NDC Corrections Officer Juan Reyes left her with this one night last summer. Bloody and bruised lips and an injured leg.
Yeah, well, he said he tripped, but he did not. He punched me directly and knocked.
She's 70 years old. She got punched in the face.
Me on the against the wall. I hit my head and I had big bruises.
After a July MMA fight at the Crown Plaza ended, another brawl started in the hallway, stemming from a feud between two families. Lyons admits she got involved when two women started to go at it. Then Reyes stepped in.
A man hit her close fist and dropped her.
She dropped like a sack of rivets, and she went down like a bag full of milk bones, folks. All right, here's a little Stephen Wright, a little comedy to lighten your day. I'll take you out with some music after that. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll come back for the next hour.
I bought one of those little glass ball things with the snow in it. You turn it upside down, then you turn it back, and it starts snowing. I bought one. Except the one I have has a little plow in it that comes out and does the roads. It's good. I like it. Last night I was in a bar and I walked up to this beautiful woman and I said, "Do you live around here often?" She said, "You're wearing two different color socks." I said, "Yes, but to me they're the same because I go by thickness."
All
And she said, how do you feel? And I said, well, you know, when you're sitting on a chair and you lean back, so you're just on two legs and then you lean too far and you almost fall over, but just at the last second you catch yourself. I feel like that all the time.
All right, Stephen Wright, pretty weird guy, huh? Funny comedian. I'll take you out with some Loretta Lynn. The recall's going on, and if you want to get involved, they gave me a number. They asked me to pass the number out. It's 575-312-1542. Give them a call. Take you out here with some Loretta Lynn, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. We'll be back after the break on the hour.
Daddy loved and raised their kids on a miner's pay. Mommy scrubbed our clothes on a horse floor every day. Well, I've seen her fingers bleed. Who complained there was no need. She'd smile in mommy's understanding way. In the summertime, we didn't have shoes to wear. But in the wintertime, we'd all get a brand new pair. From a mill order catalog.
Good morning, it's Kelly, 706. And we have spent the first hour, I talked about and tried to get some reaction on Ferguson, and we only got one call. But I do think that people are uncomfortable with how the president is handled race, and I think that I don't think that Obama is the most dishonest person in history, but I do think that he has misled America on some issues. And I'm not defending him in any way, shape, or form from on the issue of being honest. It's just that I think that he did tell the truth on certain things, and people didn't take him seriously or didn't really know what he meant, one of which was, we're going to change this country radically, you know? Or we're gonna change, and people didn't know what he was talking about. They believed him when he said he was going to cut deficit spending in half. They believed him when he said that you could keep your doctor, hospital, that the health care would go down, the prices would go down, not up, all these different things. But I think that people are uncomfortable about how he talks about race and some of the decisions that he's made. And to be quite honest, the president comes across to me, I don't like to listen to him speak. I'm not comfortable when I hear him speak, because I don't know a lot of times. I feel like a lot of times, and I know that I mentioned this before, that he's not being candid on the one hand, and on the other hand, he's laughing at people. He's like got this plan that he's been working on ever since he got into office. And he's used the plan to break down people's will. We're not as strong of a country in terms of will, in terms of our self-identity, as when he came in. And I think that's one of the things that he wanted to do. He wants us to adopt a new identity. That's what I think is going on here. And whatever it takes for that to happen. And that he's a critic of America. And that he wants... you know, he wants to push us down. And what here's my problem with the president and with leftism in general on these issues. You want change, you want radical change. And I've been recently studying the progressive movement, which I'll tell you about in a minute. You want change, but what if the change makes things worse, not better? You ask that to these people, and it's like they don't even think about that. It's like there's going to be a change, and therefore it's going to be better, seems to be their perception, when history is full of examples of countries and societies becoming much, much worse. So he wants change, and there is this idea out there that if you're going to make an omelet, you have to break eggs, is basically the attitude that we're going to have change. We need to have change, and therefore things are going to have to get broken. There's going to have to be a revolution in some manner or some way. And whether it's less or more destructive is not really the issue. We have to have a revolution. If you're on the left, things happen through revolutions, and they don't happen without a revolution. We got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Tony.
Hey, Tony, what's up?
Hey, on this whole issue of race, Obama, Ferguson.
Yeah.
I mean, we as a country, we just fell into it, the plan, the master plan of dividing this country. Why do you think Al Sharpton has been at the White House, 80, 90 times? This is all part of the plan. You know, while we're fighting each other, Obama gets to do backdoor deals with Iran, with Mexico on amnesty. I mean, this is exactly what they want. Total chaos in this nation. I mean, we're on the verge, literally on the verge of a civil war.
Yeah.
And we can't stay quiet.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's, I don't know how close we are to civil war, but I do think that there's a lot of unrest out there. And when you see that these two cops get shot, I mean, that is so troubling, you know?
It's disgusting, and it's sad, because what's happening is a divisive narrative that's out there among the leaders of this country, Holder, Obama, Jared, Rice. They find nothing positive ever to say about America. I don't even understand why they're here. I don't even understand why they're in positions of power if they hate this country so much.
Well, how about this, Tony? We've lost our way as Americans, and now, like anybody who's confused, it's easier to take advantage. We've given up who we used to be, which was, at some level, a Christian experiment. I know it's shocking to liberals to hear this, but if you go back and look at the earliest records of the people who came here, it was an experiment in Christian liberty, in which the government was not going to get overly involved in your beliefs. And from there to now, it's like there's this relentless effort by the media and by the political class and by the university, the colleges, to get people to give this up. But where do we go from there? I mean, if we give that up, which is our heritage, it is basically our inheritance, our cultural inheritance. If we give that up, where are we supposed to go?
Exactly. And that's what they want. They see, they want, the elites want to take this country over and make it a dictatorship / regime that they can run, because they're so busy telling everybody how evil we are, how evil white people are.
Hold on 1 second, Tony. This is Kelly. I'll come right back to you. Yeah. So, Tony, I got another call here. But what do you think if you could make a national speech? Let's just say for some reason some group picked you to give a national speech. What would you say to everybody on these issues? And hold on 1 second. This is Kelly. I'll be right back. Yeah, go ahead.
We must stick together as Americans. We need to stop hyphenating who we are. Because when someone comes after us, they don't come after Black America, Muslim America, Jewish America, Mexican America. They come after America and Americans.
Yeah.
And we need to stop this nonsense of dividing ourselves.
Okay.
It's one nation under God, not many.
E pluribus unum, out of the many come one.
Yes, and we stopped thinking that way. Now we're one of the many under many.
Yeah, that's true. Anything else, Tony? I got more callers.
No, go ahead.
You stirred the pot. Thank you very much for the call. This is Kelly. Who's this?
Good morning, Kelly. This is Jim.
Jim.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm fine. How you doing? What's on your mind?
Well, you know, I find myself doing the same thing as a lot of our TV people do, asking rhetorical questions, you know, like the gentleman before us, and I've done it myself, is, gee, how do these people get elected? Well, they got elected because we put them there. They didn't get there by osmosis, or they didn't force their way. What's happened is, you know, it's human nature to want something for free, but when you start giving away, you'll take advantage of it.
Yeah.
But if you don't give it away, make them work and make them do that,
yeah,
they cannot what's happened is our country has fallen into the trap of the freebies and all the goodies, and therefore that's who we look for. And you can't blame the people in office. You got to blame the people who voted and put them there.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. I mean, I would say that at some point a president is just a symbol of the party, but the president can individually decide to do things, and I think that there's a whole group of the people behind the president who are pushing him in the direction he's headed, and it's very scary to know that they're more interested in change than they are in quality of life, in my opinion. Jim, was there anything else you wanted to say?
No, Kelly, that's it. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell on the show. Who's this?
This is Jake.
Jake?
Yes, Jake.
Jake, what's going on?
Hey, Jake, I just wanted to I agree with Jim in some ways. And then Tony, on the other way, I kind of don't, you know, no disrespect.
No, it's okay.
With the country falling.
Hey, Jake, can you turn down your radio? And to disagree with people is what good radio is made out of. So don't apologize. Go ahead, though.
All right. When they're saying that our country is falling, honestly, it's been falling for since before Obama's came into the picture.
Jake, when do you think it started, in your opinion, from your analysis? When did it start falling apart?
I want to say since, you know, year 2000.
What happened in approximately then?
Approximately then, and me just saying 2000, I want to say, I mean, this whole race card that's been going on, you know, black on white crime, white on black crime, it's been going on forever. It didn't just recently start with the Ferguson, with the cops thing. It's been going on and going on with the kids doing the chant in that school. You know, it's been going on. People are just looking at it more now because some people are hating, saying, oh, we have a black president, or, you know, we used to have a white president. The country was better. But then Jim is right. We voted for this man. We put him in the office. You know,
Are we schizophrenic, Jake? Are we schizophrenic now? Are we trying to get things that are contradictory? Are we expecting? Are we trying to build ourselves up while destroying ourselves? Are we hating ourselves? Are we, you know, hating the racism in America? What is driving this confusion?
Exactly. You took it all out of my mouth.
Sorry
exactly
about that.
What you said. You know, for example, people are mad that, oh, well, I can't get a job no more. Obama cut my hours. People that went to college, people that graduated high school, people that have degrees are not the ones complaining. People that dropped out of high school, or people that started college and dropped out, are the ones complaining. Having to work at fast food restaurants, having to work at a gas station, they're the ones always complaining. They're the ones on welfare. Nothing against people on welfare or anything like that. If you're a hardworking person, you know, get the help you need. But don't blame it all on one person. He does not go to every person's front door and tell them, hey, you need to get a job. You need to go to school. If
okay.
you go to school, you get your education. Those are the people that I hardly see complaining about anything.
Jake, are you saying that don't blame it all on Obama? He's just one person, and it everybody has a responsibility to do better on themselves?
Exactly.
Okay. All right. I hear you. Do you agree with the president's politics overall, his policies?
And no, not all of them. I don't agree on every single one. But again, that comes into having the president for the United States.
Yeah.
Nobody agreed on Bush. Nobody agreed on the presidents before them. It's everyone voted on Obama. And I'm not saying the whole country, but the majority of the country voted on Obama. And they're the ones complaining now. It's not one person. I understand he has his wrongs, he has his rights, but who doesn't?
Of course. That's a good perspective. Okay, we got to go to break. Anything else, Jake?
That's it. God bless America, and everyone have a great day.
Thanks a lot, man. Good call. All right, folks, you heard it from Jake. Here is Loretta Lynn. One's on the way. Is it possible that we're looking for a scapegoat with Obama, that we should be looking to ourselves, as Jake said? 523-1450 to call in. I'm going to come back and talk about a couple of things that a couple of stories that I thought were absolutely fascinating. One is a column by David Brooks, The Cost of Relativism. Another one, Why Our Children Don't Think There Are Moral Facts. Those are both out of New York Times. And then there's another one, moral relativism and the crisis of contemporary education. I want to just ask you guys, is it possible that we're struggling right now because we've given up on the idea of morality? We'll be right back. 523-1450. I've got Beverly McClure calling in, and she's going to be talking about what's going on in the New Mexico Senate in terms of business in from the Chamber of Commerce perspective after the half hour. So we'll be right back. Loretta Lynn here, 719-720. One's on the way.
Here she is, the Deck of Doll, ladies and gentlemen, the fantastic Loretta Lynn.
They say to have her hair done with flowers all the way to France. And Jackie's seen in a discotheque doing a brand new dance. The rain is a falling, the faucet is a dripping, and the kids are a falling. One of them is toddling, and one is a crawling, and one's on the way.
All right, so this is Kelly, and thanks for tuning in. We're talking about racism, and Jake called up to remind everybody that don't blame everything on the president. I think the president has gotten blame, though, because to a large extent, he not only does not differentiate with the policies of his administration, he defends them and is irritated by people who disagree with them, and he seems to, I don't know, it seems like he laughs. I feel like he finds the position that he's in humorous, that it doesn't really matter what happens, but to the extent, you know, that he's changing things more than anybody thought he could, and I don't know what's going on in his mind, but I find listening to him bizarre, and then that's why I don't like to listen to him. Here's a call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Antonio. Good morning.
Good morning, Antonio. What's going on?
I'd like to comment on the president, and I think he needs to take responsibility for his actions, and he has a lot of fault because he lied to the American people. And he said he was going to do a lot of things, and they were all lies. And then he's lawlessness because he doesn't follow the laws of the land, doesn't follow the Constitution. He does whatever he wants. He said he wasn't an emperor or a king, but his actions prove it. And
hold on one second. It's Kelly. I'll put you on hold. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, Antonio, what is sum it up for me? What's your position?
He's the worst president ever. He's a liar. He's boastful, haughty, obnoxious, and again, a big liar.
Antonio, is he a son of Satan?
My personal opinion, I think he's demon-possessed.
Ooh.
But I think this country needs to repent. We need to bless God so that he can bless us. And we need to get back to following the Constitution. Is there to protect
hold
America?
Hold on one second. Put you on hold. Yeah, okay, so we'll repent, and but we still got a trip to the woodshed, right?
Well, everyone reaps what they sow. And that's like the law of gravity. Even if you don't believe in it, it applies.
Yeah, okay, so you've stirred the pot here, Antonio, as usual. So a few more calls here, but anything else?
No, that's it. Keep up the good work. Me and my family love you. My kids are teenagers, and we listen to you every morning.
Thank you, Antonio.
Keep going forward.
God bless you.
Have a good day.
Okay, bye-bye. This is Kelly. Thanks for the call. What's on your mind? Who is this, by the way?
This is the real Jake.
Okay, the real Jake responding to the fake Jake. Yeah,
hey,
go ahead.
This other Jake, I think, was off key, and this Antonio is more right on the dime than this other guy. But the head, the fish rots from the head down. Obama is to blame for everything that's happening right now. Obama is a murderer, a liar, and a thief. His plans and his way of thinking and what he's trying to do to this country is bringing us completely down. I can tell by my work. During the Bush administration, I could find jobs very easily. You can't find anything anymore. And saying that you have to have a degree and this and that, he's letting in all his immigrants to come in and all these people from all over the country taking over our jobs, saying promising them all this help. You know, they're getting all this free stuff. You're getting all these benefits. They're being able to get a driver's license really easy. This is breaking the country. If we don't have any borders, then how can we have a country?
That's true. Is the president a son of Satan, Jake?
You know, the president is, if you're not doing good, then you're doing evil. It's either one way or the other. Either you do good or you do evil. And his way of thinking and the way he's going, he's a possessed man. There's something wrong with this man.
He's a son of Satan.
And it's reflecting the country. And what Antonio says, We need a revival. We do need to repent. So it's reflecting us.
All right.
So if we don't repent, then, you know, what do we expect our president to do?
Of course. So Jake said, look to yourself. Maybe you're agreeing with him in a roundabout way. Anything else? I got another
That's
caller.
It for right now.
Thanks a lot, Jake. Two votes for a son of Satan on Obama. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Beverly McClure.
Hey, Beverly, how's it going?
Good. So, are you expecting me to call in?
Yeah, it's 7:30. I'm sorry. The switchboard lit up like a Christmas tree, like a menorah, when the subject of Barack Obama came up. So, can we take a little break and come back?
Sure.
Okay. Thank you, folks. We got Bev McClure coming on, and I'll let's have a few of these tasty ads here. 523-1450 at 7:30. We'll be right back. Hey, sorry about putting you on hold.
No, that's okay.
Calls and two votes that Obama was the son of Satan, so.
Oh, okay.
Well, you know how that goes.
Yeah, exactly.
So, well, we're going to talk about, I'm looking what Eric sent me, procurement reform, right to work, and the budget, and ACI on oil and gas.
Yeah, and I think if you would want me to, I can talk. There's some workers' comp things, too, that I think people
Anything
might want to know about.
So
I can, if you want, I can just talk about what's moving in the session because we've got 10 days left, and that would help business and anything else like that you want.
Sure.
Okay?
It'll just be a minute for the ads to burn through.
Okay, that'll be fine. Okay.
So how are things going up there?
Well, hopefully now that, I mean, it sounds bad, but now that the right to work bill is dead, we're hoping that the dam will release and we'll start to see business stuff move because they won't have to hold it hostage anymore.
Oh, well, that's interesting. So that was what happened. This is being recorded, by the way, the conversation. The only way that you can hear me is I keep the mic on and the mic records into Blog Talk. So.
Oh, okay.
Just to let you know.
Probably. Okay.
So,
yes, but we can talk about the give and take on that. And kind of, so the good news, bad news, that's kind of what I thought we could talk about, because that's the bad news, that right to work is dead, but the good news is that's probably going to free up some things to allow some pro-business, other pro-business bills to move.
Mm-hmm.
And we can talk about that hearing. I don't know how much you want to go into depth since it's not moving, but, you know, it's probably certainly interesting to highlight.
Yeah, no problem. We can go into anything you want.
Okay. Yeah, I think that'll be good. But because there's still 10 days and there's still some good stuff that's moving, and I think and not a lot of I don't want to say bad stuff, but there's really not a lot of anti-business stuff.
Uh-huh.
I think having, you know, the House, and then there's probably not too much of an appetite for those kinds of things because you know that you've got a governor that'll veto it. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you probably already know none of the governor's education reform is moving.
You think they're going to kill it?
I just think they're not going to outright murder it. They're just going to allow it to die a gentle, slow death in the last 10 days. same outcome. They're just going to do it probably a little more subtle.
Okay. Hey, I'm going to go grab a cup of coffee. Okay. I'll be right back.
All right.
Thank you. Bev, we're on in about 20 seconds.
Okay.
Kelly here, and I've got a guest, Beverly McClure, and she is president and CEO of ACI, which is Association of Commerce and Industry, which is the statewide chamber of commerce. And she is calling in to let us know what's going on up in the roundhouse during the legislative session. Good morning, Beverly.
Good morning, Kelly. Thanks so much for having me on.
Absolutely. Thanks for your patience and in waiting. And so what's going on up there?
Well, we've got 10 days left in this session, and, of course, the biggest headline probably so far has been the death of the right-to-work legislation. But we do still have some pro-business legislation that's on the move that we have bipartisan support for, and we're really hopeful that at the end of this 10 days we'll see some of those measures passed. I will tell you right now we are probably, if not much changes, on the path to probably set the record for the fewest bills ever pass a 60-day session. And while some people think that's good, I'll tell you there's some really good things out there that we'd like to see move through.
Such as?
Well, so we, you know, a lot of the members, and you and I have talked about it before and really got a great response even from your part of the state, to talk about this issue of procurement reform, or in other words, getting our state agencies to use our New Mexico tax dollars to create New Mexico jobs by doing business with New Mexico businesses. It's really a no-brainer. However, years and years of practices have seen billions and billions with the B dollars go out of state for out-of-state companies. So one of the pieces of legislation that we have moving through is having a group that's already in existence do a random audit of RFPs, requests for proposals that are out, to make sure that those proposals don't have any language in it that's not required by the procurement code that prohibit any New Mexico company from competing. The other piece of that legislation is right now that committee exists, but the state procurement officer chairs it and has a vote. So he basically, in that position, oversees himself, and we want to change that. That has moved to the House of Representatives without one negative vote. It's been totally unanimous in every committee, and now moves to the Senate for consideration. So we're a lot of bipartisan support. The other bill that's going through and has made it all the way through the Senate, now moving to the House, is what we call the Sunshine Portal, and that is to require all agencies to put the contracts on the Sunshine Portal so every taxpayer can look, see what the contract is, see if it went in state or out of state, if it went out of state. We want an explanation of why nobody in state received that contract. We think the behavior you have to report, well, you know, is usually the behavior. If you're having to put that on the Sunshine Portal, maybe it will change the way you think about always awarding these contracts out of state.
It seems so bizarre that we would default towards out of state when we so desperately need a stronger economy.
You're exactly right. And we do have talent here. And the truth is, when all things are equal in a bid, and you've got a local company versus an out-of-state company, they're not equal. The in-state company, and there are studies to show this, that for every state dollar we invest in them, the amount of money they return to us, the cumulative impact of that dollar. And a lot of people will push back and say, wait, didn't we have this in-state preference? And the answer is yes. But when a company jumps through all the hoops to get the in-state preference at the Tax and Revenue Department, it never is communicated to another agency. Got the list of vendors and folks that have already been approved. There's nothing on that list for any procurement officer to see if it's an in-state versus out-of-state. And we're just asking for something as simple. And we actually passed the memorial last session to have this done, and it's been a year. In a year, we still don't have it. Just highlight the in-state companies so procurement officers and other agencies can see that this is an in-state company, and we still haven't even seen movement on that.
All right. So, but what's going to happen now in the legislature on this?
So what we hope is that these two bills will move through. Again, we've had bipartisan support, but of course, with 10 days left, you know, it's going to be a lot of heavy lifting, a lot of just continuing to move these bills through the process. And a lot of it is there's so much right now that's in a logjam. And part of that is that right to work took so many hours. And, you know, and some things, quite frankly, were held hostage, pro-business things, kind of in exchange for to see what was going to happen with the right to work legislation. And that legislation, of course, effectively was killed on Tuesday by a party line vote in the Senate Public Affairs Committee. Prior to that, we've had several hearings on that, and those hearings have gone hours. I'm talking like 4 and 5 hours, and hundreds of people, you know, that are workers for the unions have come to testify. And it's been a very emotional issue. This is probably my 16th or 17th legislative session in New Mexico. And I have never seen such an emotional, contentious issue as this issue. And it's heartbreaking because those workers really believe that this legislation will cost them their jobs. And just as a reminder, Kelly, right to work doesn't prohibit unionization, doesn't prohibit collective bargaining. All it says is that if you go to work for a company, you're not forced, that's unionized, you're not forced to pay union dues. And right now, union dues are a requirement for employment at companies. And so we did a poll, and the Albuquerque Journal did a poll, and 60% of New Mexicans favor right to work. And only 6% of our workforce is unionized, and that 6% is holding the other 94% hostage.
Well, you know, they ran this ad, and the ad said it'll cost you jobs, but it didn't put any facts whatsoever in there. It just made a statement, you will lose your job from this, so...
Yeah, and it's too bad because we know that Michigan, when Michigan passed this in 2013, they added a couple hundred thousand jobs. We have the numbers. We can show you the numbers where states, after they became right-to-work states, they actually increased the number of jobs. Well, gee, don't we need to do that here in New Mexico because our economy is struggling so much? The other interesting thing is that right-to-work states have a greater number of people unionized, and those unions and the strength of the unions actually grew the number in, after they passed right to work because the unions had to work for it. They had to get approval, just like I do. I can't force somebody to join ACI. I have to prove my value added. So it's really upsetting that such bad information was out there.
Bev, you know, it reminds me of when the unions fought modernization in Detroit. Under the idea that they were saving the union, they were killing it because they just exported the plants to other places.
That's exactly right. And the one thing we say to the unions, you know, we should all be on the same page because for you to have members, you have to have people working. And to have people working, you have to have employers here. We have to help current employers grow, and we have to bring new employers in. We should all be on the same page. The other thing we should be on the same page is to try to lower the percentage of our population living in poverty. And without exception, right-to-work states have fewer percentage of their population living in poverty than New Mexico. The facts are there. You know, take the emotion out. That's one thing we kept saying. Let's don't argue about on the emotional aspect of this. Let's argue of facts and facts only.
Well, you
know, that said, that legislation is not moving.
All right. So what other things you guys working on?
So let me talk about some workers' comp. We've got three workers' comp bills that also have bipartisan support, and we hope will make it through. One of those reduces the amount of benefits that a worker who's under the influence of drugs or alcohol can collect if they're hurt while under the influence at work. So it reduces the amount they can collect, and that's something that's been big for our employers. The other one defines the definition of temporary benefits. Right now, temporary benefits is 13 and a half months. So if you do the math, that's, is 700 weeks, which is 13 and a half years. Sorry, I misspoke. So a temporary disability can be for 13 and a half years, and to define that temporary disability where it's very clear in the law, because if you're a small employer and you have somebody out on temporary disability, you can't backfill that position. And the other is the return to work legislation. And what that means is if you have a worker that's out on workers' comp and you offer them a position that medically they can do, another position that medically they can do for the same or greater wages, the worker has to return to work and or not be able to continue to collect. And we're in a situation right now in New Mexico where some folks would rather stay out on the workers' comp benefits rather than return to work in some other capacity. So we're actually, again, seeing bipartisan support on that. There's also a bill moving through that would reduce some unemployment benefits. There's a new formula that went through, and we have employers that have experienced as much as 200% increase in their unemployment insurance contributions. We actually had an owner of a restaurant, and he's only had two claims in the last 3 years, and her rates went up 4,000%. And you heard me correctly, 4,000%. So looking at ways to mitigate that, and I think that's something that would be of relief. And if you'd like, I'll talk about the budget. I'm not sure what our time frame is, and talk a little bit about some pro-business things in there.
Yeah, a couple more minutes. Go ahead.
Okay, so one of the things that we talked about last time I was on the show, and one of the things like Mavada there in your part of the state and other economic development groups are wanting is a closing fund for the state of New Mexico to help us recruit new employers as well as help current employers expand. And that's the Local Economic Development Act funding, LEDA, $35 million in House Bill 2, which is the budget that is being included. So even with the flat budget, we're seeing that $35 million hold strong. $15 million from last year is in that fund. 10 of it was going to revert. They're going to change the language. So we'll walk out of here with a good amount in that LEDA funding for the first time. The Job Training Incentive Partnership, JTIP, that many of our employers use, there's $7.5 million in the budget for that, $5 million recurring. And then there's some extra money for the New Mexico Partnership, which is the marketing arm of our economic development. So even with the flat budget, legislators and the bipartisan are realizing we really have to focus on helping the economy of New Mexico, especially now with the price of oil down. It's the perfect storm for us to begin to talk about diversifying our economy. So it's good news, bad news, but I really do believe it's the perfect storm. We're seeing things move forward, and I just appreciate the business community has really, really been involved and active during this session, more so than I've seen, and I think that awareness is due to the fact that we need jobs so badly.
Absolutely. Okay, so how do people get a hold of your group so they can find out some of the studies and some of the work you guys are doing? Maybe they'd like to be involved.
That'd be great because we are a membership organization and we welcome people to participate in our committees where we craft good policy and keep you very up to date. Our website is nmaci.org, NewMexicoACI.org. And go to that website. All the information's there, all of our contact information, our policy statements. And we'd be glad to talk to you more if you have specific questions. We'd love to have people engage with us to work with us as we move the state forward.
Do you guys have a phone?
Do we have a what?
Phone.
Sorry. I thought you said a vote. You can tell I'm in the legislative session. I hear the word vote.
Bev,
yes,
I know you have a phone. I know you have a phone. Yes, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't know if you
That's
wanted
okay.
to give it out. Let me know if I'm interrupting. Go ahead.
No. 505-842-0644. So that's 505-842-0644.
Okay. Thank you so much, Bev. Anything else?
No, thank you. I appreciate it. And I'll come on after the session, and we'll give the full wrap-up of what lived and what died and why.
I'll be holding my breath until then.
Okay. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me on today.
Thanks a lot, Bev. Take care. Folks, that was Bev, Beverly and McClure, and she's president and CEO of ACI, Association of Commerce and Industry, statewide chamber of commerce. I asked somebody what they thought of my show the other day, what their impression was, and they said that I was a conservative I was pro-business. You know what I'm really in favor of is people having an opportunity to get a job in this town, you know? I'm no more of a fan of multinational corporations than anybody else, but I really think it's important that people have an opportunity. They have a lifelong dream. They see an opportunity in the community to open up a business and make their family a little bit wealthier, be able to send the kids to school and form a foundation for security. I think that's the American dream right there. Folks, 7:50, let's take a little break. Here's a little more Loretta Lynn. One's on the way. We'll be back. I'm going to try to squeeze. I guess I'll probably have to say it tomorrow because I was going to tell you guys something, and then we got some phone calls. Somebody was calling the entire time that this interview was going on. So if you're that same person, call back, and I'll bring you on. But we'll be right back. 7:50, Kelly O'Connell, KOBE, 523-1450. We'll be right back on AM 1450.
$1 million patch, and Debbie's out in Vegas working up a brand new act, and the TV show and Newlyweds a real fun game to play.
It's Kelly, and just talked to Bev McClure. One more time, just to let you know, I have the same problem with big business that you guys do, and I've criticized Walmart and some other places. I'm reluctant to go after. I don't like it when people go after capitalism, not because everything in the economy or capitalism is perfect. It's just that the alternative is so unacceptable that it doesn't seem to me to be credible to trash capitalism to prop up some other idea. We're never going to live in a utopia, and everybody needs an opportunity to work. And if you go out and trash the owners of businesses as all being selfish, greedy people, the problem with Marxism and communist, socialism, progressivism, fill in the blank there, is the antidote kills the patient. You know, the patient has a disease. Capitalism is not perfect because some people involved in capitalism are greedy and some are unfair And, you know, a lot of, oftentimes business owners or bosses are less than sympathetic to their employees. We've all had jobs where we've worked for people that were unpleasant. Do you therefore destroy the entire capitalistic enterprise because of that? No, you try to make it better. And so here's another thing to think about. This theory of capitalism comes out of thinkers like Adam Smith, who writes The Wealth of Nations and stuff. This is coming out of this culture that was a very, very Christian, Protestant, you know, the Catholic-influenced culture and Jewish-influenced culture. And so there was never this idea that we were going to have capitalism without any influence from the church or from the Bible or from pastors or whatever. Now we're developing a society, and that's what I was going to talk on today. I'll have to do it some other time, but maybe tomorrow. We're moving into a period of time in America, in the West, where the idea that there are moral facts, a moral fact, it kind of sounds strange, doesn't it? A moral fact, that there are moral facts that we have to respond to. Now, here is something that I'll kind of communicate to you that is a moral fact. You shouldn't murder people. Yeah, I might say, well, of course, everybody knows that it's the law. Well, whether it was the law or not, you shouldn't murder people. That's a moral fact. There's a lot of moral facts out there, and David Brooks writes this column, The Cost of Relativism, that we've raised generations of kids now where we've told them morality is a question. We've tried to put a non-judgmental teaching together, educational system, which has created a total disaster. That's one of the problems now with the millennials, is they were raised, their parents and grandparents probably came out of this educational system where everything is, you know, there's facts such as the circumference of the earth and the temperature outside and stuff like that, and everything else that you can't prove in a test tube is an opinion. But we don't really, you know, we don't really believe that. We believe, for instance, it's wrong to murder people. It's wrong to steal. It's wrong to, most people believe it's wrong to commit adultery and stuff. So what I'm getting at is this. I thought it was a pretty interesting set of articles that I ran into, believe it or not, in the New York Times. And then one was from the New American. But the upshot was that we're living with the survivors of an educational system. And this has nothing to do with teachers. And really, it's a larger problem than people like Stan Rounds or whatever, who I don't know anything about Stan Rounds, whether he's bought into this idea or not. But it is the heir of teachers like John Dewey and such, who wanted to take the classics out of education and replace them with theory that it lies behind kindergarten, that children go into an environment where they are surrounded with stuff and then they begin to teach themselves about the world. That's a total abortion or abomination of what the founders thought, the founding fathers, the founders of America thought. The culture of Europe when America was formed would have been so opposed to that, because they would have thought, no, you can't teach yourself. People need to teach, you know, that we need these teachers to teach us, and they have to be using the right stuff. So the upshot that I'm getting at is, I'll talk about it tomorrow, is what can we do now that that we bought so heavily into this what you would call relativism, that there is no good or bad, it's just what you decide it to be. Where can we go from that? And what David Brooks was saying, we need to return at some point to a religious or a moral understanding of the earth, or you know, our society, or we're going to destroy it. So we'll talk about that tomorrow. World record, 100 inches of snow in Italy in 18 hours. Shocking. We have one last call here. You have 10 seconds left. Go ahead.
Yes, this is Deborah. Yeah, I think he's a worker of Satan, Obama.
A worker of Satan, but not a son of Satan. You've given him a little reprieve there. Thanks for the call, Deborah. All right, folks, we're out of time here. I promised I was going to play Can't Stop Loving You. I'll play it tomorrow. You can go on Blog Talk Radio and hear the show again.